Whether you are a grave digger, a railroad worker, a teacher, an astronaut, we all have profound ability to shape the lives of others.
The one and only Robin Sharma.
I think often we're chasing happiness, but it can sometimes be a little narcissistic how much we pursue happiness. I think pursue service, pursue helpfulness, pursue intimacy with your gifts and talents, and happiness is the byproduct. Small, daily, seemingly insignificant improvements, when done consistently over time, lead to stunning results. So little acts of awareness and little tweaks and optimizations on our spirituality, our mindset, our heart set, the way we work, the way we eat, over time compounds into personal transformation.
How can we look behind the mirror of our identity and really find ourselves, our like true honest self that is here to serve and to be the light in the world? Hallo, so schön, dass du da bist hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident. Dein Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und ich freue mich so, dass du da bist. Danke, dass du deine Zeit hier mit mir verbringst in diesem Podcast. Und heute gibt es einen so coolen Gast, und zwar the one and only Robin Sharma. Und Robin Sharma kennen bestimmt viele von euch. Unter anderem ist er der Autor von dem Buch Der Mönch, der sein Ferrari verkaufte. Ist, ich weiß nicht mit wie vielen Büchern, Nummer 1 New York Times Bestseller, ist Leadership Coach und tatsächlich einer der Coaches, dem ich schon seit vielen, 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 vielen Jahren folge und wo ich einfach auch schon wahnsinnig viel von lernen konnte, weil er einfach wirklich richtig geile Leadership Skills hat, wo man sich gut was abgucken kann. Und ich sitze hier mit Robin Sharma zusammen im Interview und wir sprechen vor allen Dingen über sein neues Buch, wo es darum geht, Reichtum, den man mit Geld nicht kaufen kann. Ja? Also Wealth Money Can't Buy ist sein neues Buch und auch Nummer 1 New York Times Bestseller. Und genau, es geht darum, was ist eigentlich Reichtum? Wie kann man eigentlich Spiritualität und Reichtum miteinander verbinden? Geht das überhaupt? Und ganz viele andere spannende Themen. Ich wünsche dir so viel Freude mit diesem Gespräch. Das Gespräch ist auf Englisch, bleib aber dran bitte, denn du kannst auf YouTube einfach die deutschen Untertitel anmachen, okay? Da kannst du einfach auf Deutsch dann mitlesen, weil es lohnt sich und es ist wirklich ein so schönes Gespräch. Und ich wünsche dir jetzt ganz viel Freude dabei mit Robin Sharma. Robin, I'm so excited, really so excited to have this conversation with you. You've been like for such a long time, like a faraway mentor for me. So I'm following your work since like a really long time. And you are one of my leadership go-to content person. So thank you so much for the work you do and the inspiration also you gave me for my work. So welcome to the podcast.
Well, it's an honor to be helpful to you and it's great to meet you.
Thank you. So I told you a little bit of the work I do and the podcast is mainly about spirituality and personal growth. And I feel that very often when it comes to wealth, there is for people this thing, it's either spirituality or wealth. So for a lot of people, it's very difficult to bring it together. So you're either a good spiritual person or you are abundant. And I have a very, very different view from that, but I would really like to hear your perspective on it, especially in regards to your book when it comes also to wealth, money can't buy.
What a lovely question. And I think you're right. I think there's a mindset in some circles that you can either be spiritually grounded and spiritually awake, or you can be material and in the world. But I think it's easy to be a monk meditating in deep peace on a mountaintop. I think real spirituality and real strength and real humanity is to be in the world and a good person and an awake person. So as you know, The Wealth Money Can't Buy, the new book, is based on the 8 forms of wealth. And lo and behold, the 5th form of wealth is money. And you used a keyword, Laura, which is abundant. this universe, as far as I can tell, is abundant with stars. It's abundant with opportunity. It's abundant with great ideas. And it's abundant with flowers. We were talking about trees before we started speaking on camera. And I think it's abundant with money as well. And money is not evil. Money allows us to do great things for ourselves, for our family, and for the world.
Mm. Yes. In my own personal growth story and on my spiritual path, I had this profound shift when I felt that something inside of me changed from this lack, this feeling of lacking something, into this inner fulfillment and this feeling of I have something I can give to the world. And while I was reading your book, I was thinking about, is the key to wealth and an abundant life to heal your inner emotional wounds you have that keep you from being good to yourself, to allowing yourself to be abundant, to be wealthy?
I think that's one form of wealth. The first form of wealth in the book is growth. I believe income and impact reflect self-identity. I think our relationships, whether it's a relationship with loved ones, with strangers, our relationship with our work, our relationship with our money, reflects our self-identity. I think a lot of us suffer from undeservability issues. So we don't feel we deserve love. We don't feel we deserve great health. We don't feel we deserve prosperity financially. We don't believe we deserve peace. So what do? Consciously, we want it. Subconsciously, our identity is of undeservability, so we sabotage it. So the first form of wealth, which is growth, yes, we need to heal our mental programs, our emotional wounds. But I think there are seven other forms of wealth that are equally important, like wellness, like family, like mastery, like the eighth form of wealth, service. I think often we're chasing happiness. It can sometimes, I want to be really careful, but it can sometimes be a little narcissistic how much we pursue happiness. I think pursue service, pursue helpfulness, pursue intimacy with your gifts and talents, and happiness is the byproduct.
When we talk about service, I'm wondering that isn't it also that you first have to understand that there is something you can give to serve? Or would you say that it's first the intention to be of service, and by that intention, your gifts are kind of given to you, or you find them by serving? So what is first? Because I feel that very often people are like, but I don't have anything to give. I don't know how to serve or whom to serve. Like, what's your take on that?
There are no extra people on the planet. Whether you are a grave digger, a railroad worker, a teacher, an astronaut, we all have profound ability to shape the lives of others. There's two examples that come to mind. One of my favorite doormen, I stay at a lot of hotels around the planet. One of my favorite doormen, his name is Alberto. He works at a hotel in Barcelona. About a year ago, I had a conversation with him. It was a beautiful day in Barcelona, and we were just the two human beings connecting. And we were talking about making a difference and all this. And I sort of got the feeling that maybe he didn't recognize the impact he could have. And I said, well, you know, Alberto, if you uplift and influence 100 people every day, that's 30,000 people every year. He paused. And I said, after 10 years, that's 300,000 people you've touched. He paused. And I said, after a lifetime, that could be over 1 million. Looked up to the sky. I think there were tears in his eyes. Secondly, we're here in Berlin. So yesterday I went to a Starbucks and I got there just at opening time. So it was fairly early. The place was empty. And the gentleman was just wonderful. the barista. It's easy to say, oh, I'm a barista. I can't make a difference. He was wonderful. He made me laugh. I said, do you have a stopper that'll so it'll keep the coffee hot? And he said, no, we don't have one, but I can give you a lid that has kind of a stopper, but that'll be an extra 10 euro. And we just started this conversation. And because of that connection, I said, I'll be back tomorrow. And I was there today. But hopefully those are two clear examples of people who might not be billionaires, but they're human beings who are having a profound difference. And I think that's one of the challenges. Our society says you need a lot of money to win, but you don't need a lot of money to win. It's you need a lot of heart and intention and goodness to win.
That's beautiful. Has there ever been a time in your life where you really needed your own spiritual connection to get through a difficult time, where you felt that your spiritual wealth and your spiritual connection helped you through a difficult time?
Great question. There's an old idea, which is when you're down on your knees, you're closest to God. So during the very dark times of my life, where I've been in the valley of darkness, that's when I remember in one of those seasons, I journaled in 1 month, 600 pages, processing and trying to figure it out and, you know, just putting my sadness and my disappointment and my heartbreak on the written page. But, you know, another old idea is a bad day for the ego is a great day for the soul. And one of the chapters in The Wealth Money Can't Buy is your herders are your helpers. So I think it's the very people who hurt you that accelerate your healing. So in the difficult times of my life are when I really reached out, especially to my spirituality. It's when I prayed more. It's when I listened to guided meditations. I'd spend hours every day walking in the woods, trying to feel better and trying to figure things out. And I think the times of our greatest healing are when we're in dealing with troubles.
You said that the people who hurt us the most are sometimes our most important healers, kind of at the same time, because they show us something where we can heal. And I would like to go a little bit deeper into that, because I feel that it's absolutely true. And at the same time, you said a bad day for the ego is a good day for the soul. Sometimes it's so difficult when you are hurt by someone and you're in the middle of the situation, and maybe you even feel so that this person treats you so unfair. Like, what is your emotional healing practice, maybe as well, how to get out? Because I guess sometimes you're angry, sometimes you're sad. I mean, you're a human being as well, I guess. how do you actually get out of those feelings, or not even get out, but how do you acknowledge them? Because there is the ego and there is all this feeling, and how can you really live by it?
Well, Carl Jung, the great psychologist, said difficult emotions that we don't deal with, that we swallow, come back to haunt us in unseen ways. And so our society suffers from toxic optimism. Your heart is broken? Do a gratitude list. You lost a job? You're dealing with the cost of living crisis? Be happy. Count your blessings. That's toxic optimism. So I don't think you can go to the intellectual part of looking for the blessings in your life if your heart is hurting. And I think if you don't deal with the emotional component, I mean, the world talks about mindset. In my work, I talk about mindset, which is your psychology, but also heart set, which is your emotionality, and health set, which is your physicality, and soul set, which is your spirituality. I believe we have four interior empires. So if you're hurting, I think you have to tend to the hurt versus going to denial. Because otherwise you're going to repress it and swallow it, and that will form what I call the field of hurt that you'll be carrying invisibly. Usually I don't talk about these things. I think we can go deep with you and your audience. So we develop this shadow, what Carl Jung called the shadow, of all the micro and macro trauma we've picked up, and society said swallow and pretend isn't there. And then we wonder why we don't have intimacy with creativity, productivity. We wonder why we get sick. We wonder why we don't live our best lives. We wonder why we sabotage our love relationships. It's because of us in many ways. So what I would say, you ask, how do we move through it? First of all, you realize we not only have an intellectual life, we have an emotional life as well. And as I said, a physical life and a spiritual life. So what are some tools to work through those emotions? Working with a spiritual counselor is very powerful. Reiki is very powerful. Body work is very powerful. Breath work is very powerful. Walking in nature, communing with nature is very powerful. MVP, meditation, visualization, and prayer is extraordinarily powerful. I believe every prayer is heard.
Yes.
And yeah, those would be some of the tools. And journaling. Mm. For hundreds of years, we've processed through pain by opening up a journal and having a clear white piece of paper and pouring our suffering onto a written page. And I think pain has a bad reputation in our society. Pain is a purifier.
Mm.
And it's through our painful times that we learn wisdom, how strong we are, to be more loving, and to even be more creative.
Mm. Beautiful. Thank you so much for the answer. Because I feel also in the, let's call it like the spiritual bubble or the personal growth bubble, there is this tendency to this toxic optimism, right?
Yes.
To always be like, yeah, just be happy, like just rainbows. And I am, for example, I've been struggling so much with my own like darkness. And sometimes I feel like this big black cloud around me and this deep sadness. And it's, and on the other hand, I'm this like, I love life. I love it so much. But at the same time, there's the sadness sometimes. And it's a part of me. And it was first when I allowed myself that the sadness can be there and this darkness can be there, because there's also so much darkness sometimes in the world. And I think I agree so much with you that the only way to heal it is to acknowledge it, to let it be there. And I think it's so important also for us, like people who are teaching those things, to be very honest about that it's normal to have those dark moments, and it's normal to have sadness, as well as it's normal to be super happy and like ecstatic about life. But it's all life. And so I appreciate your answer to it, because I think it's so healing for everyone also on their spiritual path and on their personal growth path, to see, well, everyone is struggling with the same things. And the key is to acknowledge it, to be with it, to sit with it, and to do all the things like breath work. That has been one of the biggest game changers for me, breath work. And you talked about prayer. So I'm also a big fan of praying. Is there a certain way how you pray? Is there a certain prayer you use?
Sure. And just to go back to what you said, because I think it's very powerful. And then please remind me to answer your great question about prayer. But I think you're an empath. And I think the most creative people and many of our greatest leaders have been very sensitive. I think the reason a lot of rock stars and pop stars and great artists run into emotional problems and addictions and depression, etc., is because, you know, we're so sensitive. And this world is in a state of polycrisis right now.
Yeah.
So you're picking up, if you're an empath or you're a sensitive human being, you're going to pick up the fear of so many people. A lot of people are very, very scared right now.
Yeah.
So it's really important to protect yourself. And there's a key word that I would offer to all your many listeners and viewers, which is acceptance.
Mm.
Our society says, be happy. And if you're not happy, there's something wrong. But to be fully human, as you're suggesting, is you have a full range of emotions. You have happiness, you have gratitude, you have awe, you have wonder, you have shame, you have disappointment, you have sadness, you have anger. That's what it means to be fully human. And here's the real key. If you don't accept acceptance when you're feeling sad, if you don't accept it and work with it and befriend it, you will block yourself off to the joy, the wonder, the happiness, and the gratitude. So about prayer, I wrote this book called The 5 a.m. Club.
Well, we heard about it.
Right? So millions of people are now members of The 5 a.m. Club. But it might surprise you. I think 4 a.m. is the new 5 a.m. Sorry. And so what I do is I go to sleep earlier. For about 25 years, I'd get up at 5 a.m. Now I'm in bed by 9:30, and so I get up at 4 a.m. for an hour, 45 minutes, excuse me. I do MVP, meditation, visualization, and prayer. The prayer part of it is I pray for my family. My dad will be 86 on Friday. My mom is in her 80s. I'm very blessed to have my parents. They're healthy. They're happy. I pray for my partner, Elle. I pray for my children. I pray for our larger family. I pray for my little doggy, Holly, a Yorkie Chihuahua.
Oh.
And then I pray for my clients who put food on my family table. I pray for my readers like you, Laura, who allow me to do what I do 31 years into the game. So that builds that intimacy, so I never take my readers for granted. Then I pray for the projects I'm trying to do, and then I pray for the world, and then I pray for myself to grow stronger, et cetera, et cetera. That would be one of my prayers in the morning. Another prayer, if I'm dealing with something specific that I want to heal, is please help me heal this amidst abundance and beauty at a pace I can handle and move into the love, the radiant love that I am.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing. And I agree that our, like, sometimes darkest feelings are the one that hold the biggest treasures, like the biggest truth about ourselves. So it's so worth it to see them and to talk to them, because they have a message. And yes, so true. So in your book, you have this one sentence, which I love, and I would like to talk about it. It's the chapter 66, the you don't get lucky, you make lucky Maxime. And you have the APR, the absolute personal responsibility in regards to luck. Can we talk about this a little bit?
I would love to. I think victims look at people who are successful, whether it's financially successful, creatively successful, relationship success, spiritual success. And they say, Laura got lucky. You got lucky. Oh, he just got lucky. It's a great way to remove yourself from any responsibility, because it's almost then like genius is genetics versus a habit and a mindset and dedication and hard work. So victims, you can tell a victim a mile away often by their language. Mm. Victims are very much, they're about can't versus can. Mm. They're about complaining versus possibility. You hear victims say a lot about, it's a problem. Do you hear that a lot? It's a problem. I'm sick of this. I can't do this, but that would never work. Leaders are about AP. So victims are about CBE, complaint, blame, and excuse. And every time, we all do it, every time we complain, we blame, and we make an excuse, we are literally giving away our power to the things we're excusing. And if you practice chess every day, you become a master. And if you practice excuses every day, you become world class at being a victim. Leaders or heroes or high-functioning human beings are about APR, absolute personal responsibility. Now, you as a philosopher might say, where does destiny come into it? And I would say, heaven helps those who help themselves.
Mm. Yeah, true.
I believe there's a destiny, but we need to, let's say, get up early and eat well and work our craft beautifully and keep our promises and take care of our health and do all those beautiful things to do our part to work with the script or the destiny to make our most beautiful dreams real. So when someone says you're lucky, it's disrespecting their genius. Because if you can do it, they can do it. And secondly, I think when you say someone's lucky, this is too strong a word, but it's almost insulting. It's like, what about the 20 or 30 years I've invested in sticking in the game, being resilient, studying the craft, et cetera? It's not luck. It's a lot of other things.
So you are a mentor to so many people. Who has been a person in your life that you learned something from and who maybe gave you an advice that you carry in your heart when you move through difficult times?
When I was in my 20s, I had a neighbor and I moved into the neighborhood and I noticed that at 3 o'clock, most adults were working at a job and he was in his backyard reading magazines and sunbathing. And I got to know him. He became one of my closest friends and he was a bond trader. And so we do a lot of walks. And on one walk, he said, Robin, run your own race. And that was powerful. That stayed with me. I mean, I think what's the point of worldly success if you betray yourself in the process? There's no point in winning according to the world's scorecard and yet you feel like a fake. So I think that's one person who's helped me a lot. My mother has taught me so much. Talk about spirituality. She said, Robin, what's yours is yours. And what's meant for you will never be taken away. And what's not yours is not yours. So why worry about it? It wasn't meant for you. And my dad, his father was a priest. My dad was a family doctor, a community doctor for 54 years. And my dad was very much always messaging and talking about be helpful. When I was growing up, he would say, Robin, when you were born, you cried while the world rejoiced. He said, son, live your life in such a way that when you die, the world cries while you rejoice.
That's beautiful.
And then Nelson Mandela, my life changed when I stood in his prison cell. So I suggest everyone make that trip sometime in their lives because you'll see how a great human being lived.
That's beautiful. Before, you were talking about identity and how we have the tendency to sabotage ourselves because of the identity we are attached to. And I wonder, for someone who is maybe in a victim mentality or very connected to the victim identity, because it also gives you something, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's, yeah. So how can someone find out what their most authentic, nurturing identity is and detach from all those mental, emotional things we are attached to, who we think we have to be loved or to achieve wealth? Yeah, I mean, we all have those stories in our head, right? What is wealth and how we can achieve it? How can we look behind the mirror of our identity and really find ourselves, our like true, honest self that is here to serve and to be the light in the world?
Discovering your highest self is the work of a lifetime, perhaps many lifetimes, but it's the best work you'll ever do. So the trophy is in the journey. I can't think of a better way to live out the rest of our lives than spending a little bit of time every day discovering the highest versions of who we're meant to be. But it doesn't happen in a day, of course. I still have so much to grow and to heal and to become, but I'll tell you one thing, I'm a different person than I was 2 years ago. I think a great life is a series of little deaths. You die who you were last year must die for you to become who you must be next year. Yeah. So it's a series of little deaths. Mm. That's why it can be very uncomfortable. Someone once said to me, the path of personal growth is not for the faint of heart.
No, it's, yeah.
It can be very easy to be a member of the majority, seeking pleasure and a life of ease. But the most powerful and beautiful and fulfilling work you'll ever do is this work that we're speaking about. Mm-hmm. So where do you start? Well, awareness is the DNA of transformation. And there's a model that I teach called the three-step success formula. With better awareness, you'll make better choices. With better choices, you'll see better results. So how do you get to build intimacy with your finest self? Each day through MVP, meditation, visualization, and prayer, through silence and stillness, through nature walks, through reading books of wisdom, through conversations like we're having or conversations with mentors, through breath work, through Reiki, through massage, through baths, all those things. Each day we develop, let's call it micro awareness, little optimizations. Oh, I'm jealous about this person. Oh, I am in scarcity. Oh, integrity, talk about the wealth money can't buy. Oh, integrity makes me more feel better than even money. We are each day building more awareness if you're looking for awareness. And with better daily awareness, you make better daily choices, and better daily choices, you make better daily results. And the last thing I'd say on that is small, daily, seemingly insignificant improvements, when done consistently over time, lead to stunning results. So little acts of awareness and little tweaks and optimizations on our spirituality, our mindset, our heart set, the way we work, the way we eat, over time compounds into personal transformation.
Mm. What has been something on your journey that you needed to heal, or that was something you were attached to in the identity you thought you are, that you integrated or let go of, and that gave space to who you are right now in front of me?
Oh, we're going to need another 5 hours if we're going to go through all the things. And the more I heal, the more I realize how much I have to heal.
Yeah, so, that is the
so
thing, right?
We're going to have to do a 10-hour podcast next time. So I would say, well, I used to be a litigation lawyer before I self-published my first book, The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari.
Which is an amazing book.
Thank you so much. And I was very identified with being a lawyer. Mm. I used to wear a bow tie. Mm-hmm. I used to wear a bow tie. I had a briefcase. I was a I was a litigation lawyer. I'd go to court, and I drove a BMW, and that was my life. And so that was my identity. Mm. And of course, I was attached to that identity. And I just sort of shattered it by making a fairly hard stop and leaving my career as a lawyer. And I self-published that book in a 24-hour for anyone who is launching an ethical ambition, whether it's a love story that you're looking for, or you want to restore your health or take it to many new levels, or a spiritual enterprise. I would say the place to start is just start. And it's amazing what happens when you start. You know, the old idea that the universe starts to send you energy and coincidences, and the more you follow your path, the more quickly coincidence shows up. So I self-published this book in a Kinko's coffee shop. And long story short, one day I was in a bookstore, and there was a gentleman looking at me, and I was a completely unknown author. And he says, "Oh, The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, what a great title. Wow, tell me more." And I said, "I'm a litigation lawyer, but this is my calling. I feel it. By the way, joy is your GPS. So trust what lights you up, because that's what will light up the world." So I said, "Oh, this book is my passion and I want to get the message out." And he said, "Oh, okay, well, here's my card." And I looked at it and said, "Ed Carson, President, HarperCollins." And they bought the world rights for the staggering sum of $7,500. I'm joking. And that led me down this rabbit hole of writing these books and doing what I do.
Amazing. This is so amazing. And I agree here as well that I think it's always this thought of all the steps we have to take, right? Our brain goes so far and then it seems so difficult. But if you do the first step, if you start and then the next step, and I have this thing I'm doing right now, I call it just today. So just today, I love a little bit more. Just today, I forgive a little bit more. Just today, I try to be a little bit more honest with myself. Just today. So just today. And that makes things so easy. And if you do it just today, really good. Like, you will have a freaking good life if you really focus on just today.
Laura, your days are your life in miniature. Yeah. Yeah. As you craft just today,
yes.
So you're crafting your life. Yeah. If you want to be a marathoner, get off the couch and go for a walk today. If you want to be a globally best-selling author, write the first paragraph today. Yes. You want to find the love of your life at the grocery store, at the avocado section, walk over and talk to that person you're attracted to about your love affair with avocados.
Sure.
But it's the little acts that we think are so unimportant that, done consistently, create the life we want.
Absolute personal responsibility.
APR.
Last question. What is something that you want to gift your soul in the next 10 years? What is something you feel your soul is longing for and that you want to create for your soul to experience?
Well, my definition of success, winning, and wealth is the 8 forms of wealth in The Wealth Money Can't Buy. That is my scoreboard. Growth, the second form of wealth, wellness, the third form of wealth, family, the fourth form of wealth, mastery, the other forms of wealth. That's how I measure how I'm winning. So I want to be doing well in all of those 8 forms of wealth. Because if I'm only doing well in personal growth, but not doing well with family, I think that's an empty victory.
Very true.
I think if I'm doing well with the 8th form of wealth, that's such an important one, service, having an impact. It's one of our deepest human hungers, to know that somehow our lives make a difference. If I'm doing well in that area, but I'm not doing well in the 7th form of wealth, which is adventure, what's the point? What's the point if you're not traveling and listening to beautiful music that brings tears to your eyes and savoring a great cup of coffee or a great conversation like this? So those things are all important. If you could ask me one thing that I must do, it is to continue my mission. I don't want to retire. I want to keep on writing many more books and being of use to as many people as possible, because ultimately it's my oxygen. And I feel it's why I'm on the planet. And I think everything else is just not as important as fulfilling that mission.
Thank you. Robin Sharma, thank you really from the bottom of my heart for your being, for your light, for your purpose, for everything you give us all, and for writing those books, for just being you, and for listening to your calling when you were, 25, and to exchange your bow and tie into like a baseball cap and a sweater. And thank you for exploring like your own true identity. So we can see what you are doing and follow, kind of. So thank you so much for everything. Thank you for your time. And I will link everything up in the show notes for everyone who wants to read the book, which is in German, Reichtum, den du mit Geld nicht kaufen kannst. The German title. So thank you really so, so much. Thank you.
Thank you for your time, and thank you for the big influence you have on so many human lives.
Thank you. Ich hoffe, du hast ganz viele aus diesem Gespräch für dich mitnehmen können und bist beflügelt und inspiriert und vielleicht ein bisschen Leadership inspired. Und ich würde mich riesig freuen, wenn du die Folge bei Spotify gehört hast oder aber bei YouTube, wenn du in die Kommentare schreibst, weil bei Spotify gibt es jetzt so eine coole Kommentarfunktion und bei YouTube ja eh, wenn du gerne einmal in die Kommentare schreibst, was hast du aus der Folge für dich mitgenommen, was bedeutet Reichtum für dich, ja. Und natürlich würde ich mich auch riesig freuen, wenn du den Podcast abonnierst. Einfach die eine Sekunde einmal kurz auf Abonnieren oder Folgen klicken. Das wäre so schön und würde meinem Team und mir ein Lächeln aufs Gesicht zaubern auf jeden Fall. Also Dankeschön dafür, danke für all den Support, für Happy, Holy and Confident. Ich wünsche dir jetzt eine wunderschöne Woche. Schicke dir ganz viel Liebe, eine riesige Umarmung. Ich freue mich, wenn wir uns nächste Woche wiederhören. Und ja, ich würde sagen, Rock on and Namaste. Deine Laura.